The winner of this match will advance to the $2 million finals in the Ultimate Tournament of Champions. Will it be a retail specialist from Louisville, Kentucky, Chris Miller, who yesterday won $10,000? An investment analyst from San Diego, California, John Cuthbertson, who yesterday won $13,500? Or a TV quiz show host from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Brad Rutter?
And it will be Brad Rutter advancing to the finals of the Ultimate Tournament of Champions, because every time Brad Rutter has played, it has been Brad Rutter the winner, the winningest Jeopardy player in the world. He's undefeated in official Jeopardy play. He's won millions of dollars. We've all watched Jeopardy on TV over the years and know the host's name, and I thought it'd be great to call someone who has actually pressed that ring in button and wrote their name on that funny, with that funny marker thing they have. And so I started at the top of the list of the world's best players, and first one said, sure, you can call me. Brad, it's Lyndon calling.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Where are you right now?
I'm at home.
In Los Angeles?
Yes.
And oh, you're trying to become an actor out there, or you are an actor?
To various levels of success, but yes.
Yeah. However, you also had success in other areas.
Yeah.
I remember playing, what was it? It must have been on Super Nintendo, a Jeopardy game. I just basically sat there. So you're probably talking with one of the world's worst Jeopardy players. My lack of general knowledge is a point of comedy among some of my friends.
Wow, well, that's a pretty impressive distinction in itself.
Yeah, they actually used to play this game with me. They would try to guess a movie that I had actually seen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, guess a movie that Lyndon has seen. If you guess one, you win. How do you deal with nerves?
You know, it's actually really funny. I think, and this goes back to the acting thing, too. So when you see the surveys of people's greatest fears, it's like the old Jerry Seinfeld bit. When you look at a list of what people are afraid of, number one is public speaking. Number two is death. So you're telling me that at a funeral, most people would rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy.
Yeah.
But I just never had that public speaking fear. And I think that's a big part of it. Some of us just aren't wired with it. And I think that's a lot of the nerves, is you're going to be on TV. Hey, that's Alex Trebek right there. You know, I'm in LA from wherever I'm from. It can be pretty intimidating. But I've never been that nervous to be in front of people, and also I've, with more and more experience, the stakes have gotten higher, but I get less nervous, if that makes any sense. I guess it's probably not very logical, but.
Well, I mean, there's two forces at play, right? Like the stakes are getting higher, but you also have more experience.
Right. So. I think the experience outweighs the stakes in terms of nerves. I mean, the most nervous I ever was my first episode of the show. And even as the stakes have gotten pretty high, I just kind of get less and less nerves the more I go forward.
Because you're undefeated, a loss would kind of suck. Whereas the second time is like, oh, well, I won one time and then I lost the second time.
Well, yeah, I guess you could look at it that way. But you could also look at the fact that I've had more success than I could ever expect and really ever dreamed of. So, I'm probably going to lose sometime. So I'm just hoping it's not this particular time.
Okay, so you're not going to try to be the athlete that goes out on top?
If Jeopardy calls me back up and there's a chance I could lose, I'm not going to say no.
Okay.
That's another thing, too, is that a lot of people don't know is, at least among the people in the All-Star tournaments, The money's great, but I think I don't want to speak for anybody else, but I think I can kind of accurately guess, and this is definitely the impression I've gotten, that most of us are just there for the love of the game. It's really a lot of fun playing for that much stakes, and also the people who work on the show are just fantastic, and it's always great to see them, and they do such a great job making you feel comfortable and ready to do your best, that it's a fantastic time to play. So if it ends up that I can't say I'm undefeated anymore, but I got 50 grand and got to hang out with some really cool people, I think that's still a win.
You're like the Michael Jordan of Jeopardy. You're just gonna continue playing because you love the game,
right? And if I'm with the Wizards I don't have my old stuff anymore, it's still fun to play.
They'll have to make a geriatric Jeopardy category for you.
The senior league.
Yeah, exactly.
I will. I'll be right there.
Speaking of Michael Jordan, he would talk about how he felt like the game was in slow motion for him.
Mm-hmm.
Do you kind of feel like that sometimes in life, that you just process things at a higher speed than other people?
Well, it's hard to compare to other people, but I definitely played sports too, and I think the best sports metaphor I can come up with is when hitters are on a hot streak and they say the ball looks like a beach ball. That's you can kind of get in a rhythm like that with the buzzer on Jeopardy, I'll have to give you a little backstory here. Is there's a set of lights on either side of the big board when the system is open, and when those lights come on, you can ring in. But when you have it timed well enough, sometimes those lights won't even come on. The first light you see will be on your podium. And I think that's kind of like being in the zone and having it move in slow motion for you.
Okay, so you're not even noticing the cue that the system's open. You just all of a sudden notice that you have rung in already.
It's conscious. You're just timing it that well, so that you're pressing your buzzer at the same time the guy backstage is pressing the button to open the system.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not like one of these situations where I sometimes wonder when I'm, let's say, I'm riding my bicycle, and an insect hits my eyelid, and I realize that I've reacted to that insect coming towards my face, but I only realize it after the fact.
Yeah.
Not quite what you're describing, though. It'd be cool if it was, though.
It's not exactly that, right. But yeah, I think sometimes I can sort of feel like I'm at one with the guy who's opening the buzzer system. If that is what's happening, then I have no idea how I'm doing it. So don't ask me.
you've been taking acting classes?
Yes. So yeah, and I do improv around town occasionally as well.
You're the non-starving artist.
Right.
Yes. But still not making any more at art than the starving artist.
Correct. Yeah. Either win a bunch of money on a game show or have a trust fund. That's what I say.
Yeah, those are the two options.
Yeah, well, it's like Steve Martin. First, get $1 million.
Then?
Then I forget what that joke is. But,
oh, so you just had half the joke lined up. I was supposed to just know what you're referring to.
Oh, right. You don't have any general knowledge.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm relying on you. That's your role, Brad.
Sorry. Right. I'm so ashamed that I can barely speak.
I hear actually you're supposed to avoid shame. Like shame as in I'm a bad person, and guilt defined as I did a bad thing. You're supposed to always just say I did a bad thing, so that it's not a part of your identity.
Right.
So
well, then I did a bad thing.
You did a bad thing.
Yeah, by setting you up
for embarrassment.
Badly.
Yes.
Yes.
Answer the Daily Double. Now, Watson, although you have but $400, you know, of course, that you can risk up to the maximum value of a clue on the board, and that is $1,000.
You're listening to IBM Supercomputer
1,000.
Watson,
please
play Jeopardy.
All right, here
against
is
Brad
the Daily Double
Ken
clue
Jennings
for you. Wanted for killing Sir Danvers Carew. Appearance pale and dwarfish. Seems to have a split personality.
Who is Hyde?
Hyde, yes. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, either one acceptable. You're now in the lead with 1,400. Go again.
Beatles, people, for 200.
And anytime you feel the pain, hey, this guy, refrain. Don't carry the world upon your shoulders. Watson.
Who is Jude?
Yes.
Olympic oddities for 200.
Milorad Kavic almost upset this man's perfect 2008 Olympics, losing to him by 1/100th of a second. Watson.
Who is Michael Phelps?
Yes, go.
Name the decade for 200.
Disneyland opens and the peace symbol is created. Ken.
What are the 50s?
Yes.
Final frontiers for 1,000, Alex.
Tickets aren't needed for this event, a black hole's boundary from which matter cannot escape. Watson.
What is Event Horizon?
Yes.
Literary character APB for 200.
Wanted.
Watson mopped the floor with Brad and Ken. Which might not seem surprising that Watson knows the answer to trivia questions, except that the questions often contain plays on words that really play to human strengths, and even humans like me have a hard time parsing them, figuring out what's being asked and what kind of answer to give. What were your expectations going into that match with Watson?
Well, I always expect to win, so
that's good.
Yeah, and I think that's why I do well. Is it's easy to psych yourself out, but the other thing too was so we played a few practice matches against it, and it was 1-1-1. Ken 1-1, I 1-1, and Watson 1-1. But this was right before we taped, but that Watson was on probably 70% power for those. So they kind of sandbagged us a little bit. I thought, well, this is cool. It gets in really quick, and it's going to be tough. But I think I can maybe win this. But once the actual thing started, it was, oh my god, this thing is incredibly fast.
Literary character APB for 200.
Wanted. For a 12-year crime spree of eating King Hrothgar's warriors. Officer Beowulf has been assigned the case. Watson.
Who is Grendel?
Yes.
Final frontiers for 200.
It's Michelangelo's fresco on the wall of the Sistine Chapel, depicting the saved and the damned. Watson.
What is The Last Judgment?
Correct. Go again.
Beatles, people, for 400.
This title gal, children at your feet. Wonder how you manage to make ends meet. Watson.
Who is Lady Madonna?
Correct.
So I guess it does lead to some questions about, it's not a new question, whether it's important to have knowledge in an age of computers, like in an age of Google.
Right. Everybody used to have their smart-ass friend that, who they could ask who knew everything.
Yeah.
But, know-it-allism is less important every day. So, in fact, the only way to make money on it is on TV anymore. So, and that's great. I'm glad I came along when that's still possible. But it is quite interesting. In fact, actually, I my dad had an idea maybe 20 years ago, and he said, "Hey, you should have a 1-900 number." And I'm like, I'm not into talking dirty to people. And he said, no, it'll be like 1-900 bar bets, where somebody calls your hotline and you for $2.95 a minute and you settle their bar bets. And I was like, yeah, that's not a bad idea. But within a couple of years, it was completely obsolete. But that was a fun idea.
I remember when people first started carrying around phones with the internet, I just hated it. I couldn't stand it that our conversations were being interrupted by, I'll just look it up.
Right.
Because there is something about searching for the answer that appealed to me. At least that's how I kind of explained it to myself at the time. It could have been me just being a Luddite. But it was. But I do still think there's something to that. And I was wondering the other day, I was just kind of thinking back to that was my reaction to smartphones at first. And I think many people's reaction, they hated it, that the one guy with the iPhone's pulling it out and looking it up.
Right.
But I wonder if people have become, they're less quick to do that now than they were when it was a new toy. Now kind of people realize that it is kind of fun to try to figure it out in the group. Do you think that there has been a movement that way?
Not that I've noticed, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's where it goes. We might have been through the worst of the years where there's really no human connection and everybody's staring at their phones. I think people are starting to realize that, hey, you're spending time with people you supposedly like. Why not actually spend time with them and converse and maybe use the Google on your phone as a last resort if you're really bothered by something? And it, I guess it is kind of fun to argue about that kind of thing. Like, was that Zsa Zsa or Ava Gabor in that movie?
One of the ways that you can solidify a memory of a fact is by recalling it. For example, instead of looking up the way to spell a word in the dictionary, you're better off trying to think of it yourself and coming to the conclusion yourself. Instead of trying to look up a fact, trying to use your memory, like it's in there somewhere, you know you heard it somewhere, and if you find a way to trace a path to that memory, then that memory becomes more solidified. Something about the process of getting there helps you recall it in the future.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Because, yeah, it does. It gives you a whole slew of more experiences to associate that fact with. Because you don't just remember the fact. You remember, oh, I was at dinner with Bob, and we were talking about this, and I had to remember who did this. And, yeah, so there's people who memorize, you know, entire books and stuff and do like the mind castle type thing. They usually have to have, you know, five or six things to associate with each different fact and or word in an entire book. And then if they set it up that way, they could recite an entire, you know, 500 page book to you.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's all about creating hooks or a path of. In fact, some people that talk about memorization, they'll actually visualize spaces that they're moving within.
Yes.
Yeah, is that what you mean by the castle?
Yes, yeah. So, I don't know too much about it, but I know of people who can memorize insane amounts of things. That's usually how they do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't have any tips about dealing with nerves because you just don't have a problem with them. So you're totally unrelatable.
I also have this weird, my brain works in a weird way where facts just stick in them, which is probably also unrelated.
Yeah, yeah.
A pretty rare thing too.
You're becoming obsolete because of Google.
Yes.
Which is probably more relatable.
Yeah. Although actually, there was something I wanted to get around to that we went on in another direction on. But one thing with that is, I'm not sure that's such a terrible thing that, people have to remember less facts than they used to, and it's going to sound like sacrilege coming from me. But there's so many other things you can use your brain for, you know, creative type things, or you know, just learning another language. Let's say, I mean, there's plenty of facts involved there, but I think the less you have to keep it stacked with facts, it might even open up the rest of your mind to some things. So, yeah, who knows? I mean, it's making me obsolete, but it might be better for some people, or it might even be better for humanity in general. Who knows?
Okay, so in a scenario, I was listening to something yesterday, and they were on the radio here in Canada, and they were talking about how people's jobs are being taken over by computers, and a question came in from a child who wanted to become a novelist, and she was asking whether computers would make that job obsolete as well, or they would do that better than humans. And the person who responded to the question said, computers might one day be able to write better novels than humans, but we still might prefer to read novels written by humans because we're amazed that they wrote it. Just like we could make a robot or even a car that could go faster than Usain Bolt.
Right.
But we would rather watch the person because it's amazing that they can run so fast.
Yeah, I guess that's great news for Jeopardy then. In fact, it might even be better because people are even more impressed. Like, why would anybody know this stuff if they don't have to? They have Google on their phone, you know. But they still know this stuff. That's amazing.
Yeah, there's still hope for your 1-900 hotline.
Yeah, except it's got to be an entertainment thing rather than an informational.
Let's see if he knows this one. Sort of like the opposite where my friends play the game. Let's see if we can think of something he actually does know. Thank you for your time, Brad. Really appreciate it.
This was a lot of fun.
I had a great time as well. Okay. Hey, have a great day in L.A.
Thanks. You too in Winnipeg.
Okay,
nice
thanks.
Nice talking to you.
All right, bye. Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening. On this episode, you heard music from Les Jupes, Record of the Week Club, and right now you're listening to Apparat Organ Quartet. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.